Welcome to Vicious Whispers with Mark Tullius, your source for horror, sci-fi, suspense, and all things violent.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thank you so much for joining me today on Vicious Whispers with Mark Tullius. Today we have episode 60 at the end of the episode, which will be a short one. I've been keeping these short. I got too much stuff going on. We will have Ain't No Messiah, Chapter 7. Hopefully you guys have been enjoying that one. That audiobook is still not approved yet by ACX. Hopefully it will be out soon. But in the meantime, you can listen to this chapter at a week. What else is going on? Man, been super busy with Try Not to Die's. A couple more in development. Doing one with Johnny Campbell, who I interviewed in Unlocking the Cage. He was one of my first interviews, a really powerful interview. He was the first fight I saw that made me a fan of MMA again. And then a couple years later, I interviewed him for Unlocking the Cage again, but that time at Brown University in the classroom. And I believe both of those are on YouTube. You can just check out Unlocking the Cage, Johnny Campbell, if you want to see who one of my co-authors is going to be. Right now, he came with two different ideas that I really liked. We're still trying to decide which one we're going to roll with. Either one of them will be powerful. He's a very smart guy. Like the way his brain works. So it'll be interesting to see what he does. And then my nephew, Luke, and I have been talking about a new one. And I'm pretty sure we don't know all the details yet, but we know the location and we know kind of what happens. It's going to be Try Not to Die in the Second Civil War, which is something that it's not too hard to imagine happening in the near future. Meanwhile, Steve Montgomery just gave me, I think he's up to scene 19 right now on his, and that thing is brutal. It's good. I like brutality, but yeah, definitely a lot of trauma in his, a lot of tough decisions, a lot of violence, but action-packed, it's going to fly. So the cool thing is he's going to be done with his, pandemic is going to be done, next couple months. So all of those are being finished up. So that's cool. So at the very minimum, we'll have three Try Not to Die's this year. Next year is looking like 3 to 5, depending on finances and how many I could put out. But that's how it should be rolling. And then every year, I want to do at least 3 until I'm done with it. And as long as it's not affecting my other writing too much. Right now, I've been struggling getting through Beyond Brightside, only because I don't have a lot of time. And I know that I need to add to it. I need to beef it up because the word count's really low right now. And the end is kind of weak. So I have only, that's pretty exciting stuff. I'm down to this. That's all I got to add. Not very much paper. So can't really see the thickness on there. But let's say about 20 to 30 pages. And then I need to beef up like another 5,000 words, which isn't a whole lot. So think that's definitely doable. I'm enjoying how it is fleshing out, and today I'm going to decide, make some final decisions on what I'm going to add to it, if anything, as far as like an additional scene. I mean, I might have, right now they're at a place where they have to break in somewhere, so I might just have one more obstacle before they get in there, and then maybe inside I'll have one more obstacle that they'll have to overcome. I have to see how the story is flowing and what fits, what doesn't fit. I'm not willing to add words that are unnecessary, that aren't adding to the story. I'm definitely a minimalist. I want to use as few words as possible to describe something. Excess words, that shit's just fluff. So I'm always looking for opportunities to cut out words. That's why it's a little bit harder for me to go back in and be like, okay, I gotta add more words. Always easier to cut back down. Yeah, but I think that's going to be fun. My friend Fortunato, he was here last week, and we discussed the cover for Beyond Brightside, so we have that figured out. Now it's just a matter of getting the designer to design it. So the cover design guy is going to make that cover. So I think after, this should only take me another week or two to finish this up. And then it's already pretty well edited. All the new stuff is going to have to be edited again, and then a fine, line edit once more. I'll go back through it again, but all that could take place within 2 months, and so I should be giving it to beta readers and sending it out for reviews probably in June, and then releasing it later in the year. My problem is I generally release things too early because I don't care that much about, I don't know, I might not take that part of the book launch that seriously. I don't put that much effort into it. This one, because it is, you know, what I feel is a solid book, and I think Brightside was really solid, maybe I will give it a little bit more time to get more reviews and everything else before I do the launch of it. So yeah, but all exciting stuff, all good stuff. As far as health-wise, staying in the house for the most part, going out a little bit, walking a little bit, doing a lot of swimming. The nice thing, I've been wearing my Whoop, the wristband, so it measures all your activity, measures your sleep. That's been helping me a lot with keeping my sleep, but it's also nice to track when I'm doing the hydro, when I'm out in the pool. Just aggressive tread, like running in the water is what I've been doing, just in the deep end. So treading water, maybe like 5 to 10 minutes in the morning, 5 to 10 minutes at night, but the amount of calories it burns and just the movement is good. So it's been, I'm feeling overall pretty good for being stuck at home. So I think that helps a lot with attitude and everything else. And so that is where I am at. All right, I'm going to wrap this up because I want to go create something. I don't want to just sit here and talk. And you guys probably want to listen to Chapter 7. So here it is, Ain't No Messiah, Chapter 7, narrated by Rick Cheddar. Hope you guys are enjoying the story, and I will talk to you next week. Peace.
Chapter 7. It was November, over 2 years since the bike ride, and I was old enough to be a sophomore at Huntsville High. That's where Jeremy and Frank went, Danielle too. I knew all about their school from its newspaper. Even had my nose rebroken by a rolled-up edition a few days after the collision. Father hadn't been happy about the article written by Jeremy Ludlow. A giant photograph of the splendid billboard with the remaining letters, the headline below read, "Self-proclaimed Second Coming of Christ has something to say. Who's going to listen?" Father had been furious until the following Sunday when he had to put the school tables outside and add more chairs because our church had never been so full. Just like the other occasions where I didn't die, our fold instantly grew. We even held on to some of them, even though I nearly passed out both times I was asked to speak. Not much had changed with the school except a couple of faces. Patricia had a baby, and it looked way too much like David's for him to deny it. He'd gone off and was working at his uncle's mechanic shop. Sarah and Paul sat at the ends of their table, Warren and Tamara in the middle. Beth's desk was a TV tray off to the side, but I couldn't see much of her with Ashley blocking my view. The entire week Ashley had been with us, I'd been trying not to stare. Although she'd just turned 14, the tall blonde was mature like me. Our body's not much different than an adult's. The way I was hunched over, I could peek under my left armpit and see the lower half of Ashley's leg. It wasn't all thin and shiny like the girls in the magazines Jeremy lent me, but I'd already imagined my hands wrapping around it, pulling myself into her. She and Danielle were the reasons I had to wash my own sheets. The kitchen timer went off. Mother said, "Break. Be back in 10 minutes. I pretended like I was still reading while everyone left. It looked like a nice day out there, but it was easier to stay at my desk, turn to the back of my book, and pull out the page with all the crosses on it. On the other side of the wall, Paul and Mother switched out the cooking trays and talked about the soap operas coming up at lunch. I drew crosses and swords. The ends were sharp, dripping with demon blood. The next sword turned into a penis, the tip stretching to the sky and poking through the clouds. Someone cleared their throat, and I flipped the paper over, went back to making crosses. I glanced at the doorway and saw Beth, black skirt, black shirt, black fingernails. "Can I ask you something?" she said. We hadn't talked since, hello, her first day. I hadn't even noticed, but her skirt was just to her knees. "Sure." Beth walked up to my desk, set her hands on the top. "Paul said you're not going to get Ashley." I went back to my drawer and finished off the tip of a cross. "Correct." "Because of me?" It was too hard looking at her face because of all the hurt. Her fingernails weren't any better, all ragged and chipped. I said, I never liked doing it. Well, I want you to. I shook my head, so she knew I was serious. Sorry, I can't. Her black fingernails tapped the top of my desk 3 times. No, she said, you don't get it. If you don't do it, I'm telling your mother what you did to me. Mother's time signaled another batch of baked goods and the start of lunch. Usually I stayed inside the church while everyone else hung out by the bake stand. This time I followed them. Paul distracted Mother on the front porch while I slipped inside the house. Even in a hurry, I ran my finger along the shiny shotgun resting on the mantel, the one they'd fought over because that money had been meant for groceries. Paul coughed an extra loud warning and I made it to the laundry room before they hit the kitchen. I took a deep breath and entered the sweltering darkness of the passage. If I put my hands out, I'd be able to run my fingers along the walls, but I hated touching things in the dark, always waiting for the demon to bite, to jump, to chop off my head. I stopped and took another breath, told myself to fucking chill. In 2 more breaths, my eyes adjusted, the satin curtain to the right, a folding chair in front of it. The metal was warm, the curtain resting on my knees, the soft glow behind it helping my heart regulate. The church door opened, then closed. The lights blinked off. Everything was black except a sliver of light under the door to the house. I nearly asked Ashley to put the lights back on, but she was already walking my way, footsteps headed down the aisle, climbing onto the stage and stopping at the kneeler. I forced myself to take a breath, knew I wouldn't be able to talk like Father if I didn't. The chair on the other side of the curtain slid closer, the creak of the metal settling in when she sat on it. Using Father's voice, I asked, "Are you okay?" The voice came from so close I nearly jumped. "Yes, Father." Ashley had spoken only once in class, her voice so soft and sweet, one word running over the next like honey. I'm on my knees. Had she seen my drawing? Did she know why half the time in class my right hand was busy in my pocket? Was I going straight to hell for thinking that? Already this was a bigger thing than I wanted. I wanted to tell Ashley it was a joke I couldn't pull on her. Just tell the other kids I did. I'd wasted time not saying anything. And there was no telling how long Paul would keep Mother out of the kitchen where she might hear. I welcomed Ashley and told her to relax. Consider this a talk with a trusted friend. Tell me anything you like, and our Savior will hear. The heat from the kitchen was amplified in the passage. The sweat dripped off my forehead like Mother had stuffed me in her oven. She said, "Anything?" What I was doing wasn't right, but I couldn't stop. "Yes, whatever your heart desires." There was an awful lot I desire. Such as? I want to be close to Christ, as close as I can. Well, that was a prepared answer, but the way she'd said it made me wonder. Go on. I want to be filled with Christ's love. Every time she spoke, the passage grew hotter, less air to breathe. You are. Her voice went down to a whisper. God rougher, huskier than it'd been. I want him to lay his hands on me. My legs trembled, caused the curtain to ripple. My voice cracked when I said, "That sounds like a good thing. I want Christ inside me." My raging hard-on was pointing to heaven, pushing on my zipper. I was going to hell. She asked, "Are you there?" "I'm here, just not used to such enthusiasm." "I'm not just saying it. I want it to happen." I wiped my hands on my pants and silently screamed at myself. What was I doing? She said, "Don't you believe me?" "Of course I do." Everything became quiet. Warren was saying something out front, the birds chirping, Mother marching around inside. "Listen," she said. There was nothing, then something wet like a cat lapping milk. Her voice was different, like she'd lost control of it. "You hear that?" My swallow became a gulp. She whispered, "Stand up." I did as I was told. The satin curtain brushed the front of my face. "Give me your hand." The curtain enclosed my hand, pulled me forward and down into something warm and wet, back out again just as quick. She let go of my wrist and the curtain pushed forward, a hand on each of my thighs. "Take them off," she said. My pants and underwear fell to the ground. My whole body shivered. Her breath was warm through the curtain. Don't be afraid. The satin wrapped around me and I almost came, buried both hands in the material by my face. Oh, Jesus, was all I could say. Her grip grew harder, like she was trying to cut off my blood. Then she moved the slightest bit up and down. It felt incredible, but she was too slow. My hips rising, up on my toes, a gust of warm wind against my head, three soft nibbles through the satin. There was no stopping at that point. Some other part of me calling the shots. I bucked my hips forward and pulled on the curtain as I unleashed my demon seed. The curtain tore free and I crashed back into the chair. Mother shouted, "What's all that noise?" The laundry room door opened and she gasped, screamed my name. I pulled the curtain on top of my lap. I fell. Mother rushed forward and knocked my legs to the side. Beth was running already out the door. "Jezebel!" Mother screamed. "Out of this church, you dirty creature!" Looking down at me, she warned, "Not one word, so help me God, not one word." It was 5 days later, and I was on my 97th set of push-ups, stretched across the blanket on the basement floor in just a sweaty pair of underwear. I broke my record with 53 push-ups and wrote it in my diary. Maybe I wasn't good at a lot of things, but these numbers proved I wasn't hopeless. Jeremy first suggested I do them a couple of months before. The increase in my numbers was hard to believe. He said his real dad could do hundreds of them and said it helped to kill time. My arms and chest, shoulders and stomach were all taking shape, getting harder, becoming a man's. I wasn't there yet, but at least part of me was. I sat back against the wall and took a few sips of water. It was only 10 o'clock, and Paul wouldn't be back with a new glass until he brought lunch. As to be expected, my presence was no longer needed in the classroom. Paul brought me the news that along with my books and activities, if I had questions, I could ask them at night. I wasn't expecting visitors, but it sounded like someone was coming. I hurried over to my kneeler and faced the door just in time to see it open. Father kept his hand on the doorknob but wouldn't look at me. "Get dressed." He walked away and said, "The barn needs cleaning. Now you have time for it." It took me all of a week working every day to get just the outside of the barn in decent shape. It had been completely overgrown with only glimpses of faded red, sidling among the vines and branches, a haven for spiders and every form of insect. Since it was a Saturday morning, a couple of minutes past 8, I just did a quick glance toward the corner. Jeremy had been a no-show for a long time. I guess he'd moved on. I sat down my cardboard box of cleaning supplies in front of the barn. I rubbed my hands together, the sting of calluses and blisters rubbing together, countless punctures from all the thorns. The barn was void of growth, its rotten skin laid bare. The inside, the windows were still black, but the outside spotless. The opening between the two doors, a dusty darkness, no hands having touched it since I could remember. All my life, this was where the demons lived. I took out my flashlight and crossed myself with it, shined it inside. The light sparkled off cobwebs, draping the entire place. I kicked at the door, knocked it down on the third try. With the door on the ground, I barely needed the flashlight. I kept it in front of my feet, making sure my way through the maze of waterlogged boxes surrounded by the stench of decay. I stopped where the daylight died and looked to my right at the wall full of rusty equipment. Something slithered behind me, and I spun around, flashed my light. Boxes upon boxes stacked high and tilting over, everything rotten but in much better shape than old lady Hester, their previous owner. It slithered again. I zeroed in on a flash of black darting behind a box by the wooden loft ladder. I turned my light to the end of the barn and a square of reflected light, the window to the back door, hoping nothing would leap out. I headed for the door, shoving boxes out of my way with my leg, keeping both hands in front of my face to wave off webs. The door opened an inch before the latch stopped it. The padlock was small, and my flashlight metal. It opened on the third strike. It was difficult breathing in the cloud of dust I'd created. I yanked the door open and walked forward, felt the web tear on my fingers. A black and red spider the size of a tennis ball less than an inch from my face. I jumped back and tripped over a box, stuck out my hand to stop my fall. The sound, like a bedsheet ripped in half, pain shooting through my left palm up my arm, slamming into my brain. I screamed fuck so loud it was all I could hear until the faint pitter-patter dribble on the ground beside me. Enough light came through the door that I could see everything, the boxes I'd flattened, the long wooden handle of the three-pronged rake. I screamed again and didn't stop. 6 inches of rusted steel was sticking through my hand, blood oozing out the fleshy volcano, dripping into the pool below. Black spots blurred my vision and my voice sounded fuzzy. I raised the hand and the rake came with it, a river of blood running down the forearm I couldn't feel. I woke on the back seat of the station wagon, my head on Paul's lap, my hand a mind-numbing pulse of pain. Paul's face hung above me, the whitest I'd seen it. He shushed me and said, "Mother." She turned around in the front seat, holding my hand up high, putting pressure on both sides of the towel wrapped around it. "It's okay, honey. Look at your brother." Mother never called me that, so I kept looking at the sopping red towel, the matted hair on my forearm laying the wrong way. Every time my heart beat, the spike went through my hand again. "Jesus fucking Christ, just stop it, please." My prayer over and over. Paul turned my cheek so it was all I could see. A brilliant blue sky behind him. "You'll be okay." Father took a hard turn to the right, mother telling him to be careful as I slid across the seat. There was no question he was talking to me when he said, "What the hell were you thinking?" I didn't like the sound I was making, but it kept getting louder. My chest tight, breath catching when I tried to say sorry. "There you go," mother said. "Close your eyes. We'll be there in a minute." 3 days of bed rest was all I could do. Hand elevated above my heart, ice bags every hour, and pain pills that made it so I could barely think straight. I waited for school to stop before I got dressed to go outside. Every time my hand dipped lower than my shoulder, the dull thump magnified by 10. I took another red pill. The pain wouldn't stop me. At the barn, I turned on the hose with my good hand, used my bandaged one to hold the flashlight to my shoulder. It didn't matter. The back door was open. Anything could be hiding there. I stepped inside and gagged on the stale air. I went around in circles, spraying off each window, knocking down the webs. The smell was alive, pulling on my guts, making me throw them up in the corner. I used to be a baby about that sort of thing, but it was my third time in the last 2 days. I put my stream on it and blasted it into the mess I'd be shoveling onto the grass. Father came back that night, grinning ear to ear. All four of us were at the table, my elbow allowed to rest on it, bandaged hand up in the air. "Everyone's asking about you, Joshua. The store is out there catching fire. They say it is a sign." I could remember the last time I'd made him happy, so I kept quiet even though there was something I wanted to ask. "And your mother tells me you're already back at the barn. Way to go. Shows how tough you are." Even with the new overhead fan, I was sweating. Maybe after I'm done with the barn, I could go to school. "We already discussed that. You can learn in your room." "No, real school. I could walk there." Father set down his drink. "What is our rule?" "I know, but I'll have to leave someday. How am I supposed to tell people what to do if I don't know anything?" "If you ever listened to me, you would never ask that question." Jeremy, Frank, and common sense would have pointed out all the holes in Father's reasoning, but I couldn't figure anything out. "It doesn't look right, Charles. Joshua, do you hear me?" I didn't know if it was day or night, a fire burning through my body, its flames licking at my brain. All the lights were off in the bedroom, a touch on my fingertip making me yell. "Jesus, Joshua," Doc Hargrove said. "Are these the same bandages from the hospital?" Mother said, "Why do you think I kept asking if you were keeping it clean?" "They just got a little wet." "They showed you what to do," Mother said. "I told you to pay attention." I didn't remember much from the hospital, just the pure pain of them scraping the wound clean. Doc gagged as he undid the dressing. "Better bring him a bucket and a towel to bite on. I'll need both of you to hold him down." The next day came and went, melted into the next. Ice baths, medicine, water to sip. It was a few days later when Father came to my room, asked if I could walk. I was still lightheaded, but managed to do it, using my good hand to help along the wall. Father pointed to the chair and hit play on the VCR. "This is what you're missing." Little kids being led away from the playground, images of all the ones that didn't make it, the scars, the deaths, the tragedies. In the words of my father, all of it my fault. It was Saturday morning and my fever was gone. I was hard at work in the barn when I heard the knock on its back door. I was surprised Paul would be up so early and out of the house. Not in the mood for his games, I said, "Go around." From the other side of the door, Jeremy said, "If you say so." I checked over my shoulder to make sure no one could see him, then told him to open the door. He stood there holding a small gray camera, acting like everything was normal. He nodded at my hand that rested on my shoulder. "Read about that. How's it feeling?" "Where'd you read that?" "The Herring had a little piece. At least it was only a hand. The hell were you doing, trying to crucify yourself? Ha ha." Jeremy looked at my eyes, studied me for a second. "What they got you on, Vicodin?" "Percocet." "You're going to use them all?" "They make me want to puke." "What you need to do is smoke a bowl." "Of what?" Jeremy stepped past me into the barn and looked around. "Wow, pretty fucking cool. Too bad it smells like something crawled out of Satan's vagina." "Should have smelled it last week." "So how about the pills? Want to get rid of some?" I said sure and took out the little bottle, counted out 10 pills for myself and gave him the rest. "You've been busy." "Frank's dad got the internet. I just about live there now." He walked along the wall, picking up stuff, putting it down. "It's incredible. Best thing ever invented. You should see all the stuff Frank saved on there."
"Pictures?"
"Yeah, and videos. Anything you could imagine." Jeremy went over to the pile of crap pushed to the front. He stopped when he came to the crate of colored bottles. "They even got animals. All kinds of crazy shit."
"Animals?"
"Yeah, donkeys and dogs, horses and snakes."
"Snakes?"
He examined a purple bottle. "Yeah, it's supposed to be just the tip, but this one chick had gotten herself way too wet, and that snake just slipped out of her grasp and went on up, the whole thing. And then she started screaming like crazy, 'Get it out! Get it out!'"
"Wow."
He pointed to the crate. "How about these?"
"What about them?"
"Want to get rid of them?" I'd already broken a bunch with the hose and planned on breaking the rest, but the way he asked sounded like Paul when he was being sneaky.
"Why, they worth something?"
"Maybe, probably not much, but I'll split it with you." The bottles were probably older than Father and all kinds of colors, each one of them empty. I said he had a deal and shook his free hand, checked over my shoulder to make sure no one was coming.
"You got to stop that," Jeremy said like he was talking to a little kid. "Stop worrying about them so much. You should be able to do what you want."
"What can I do? He'll kick me out."
"There's always the army."
"They just take anyone? As long as you don't tell them you're a fag."
"I ain't one."
Jeremy pushed something away from the wall with his foot, then kicked the small dark package at me. "You haven't got it figured out yet, have you? You really think they'll disown you? Throw away the whole church? Those books he's been writing, all of it wouldn't mean a thing." I kicked the package back hard because I felt like an idiot. The rotten paper wrapping ripped halfway off, the book stopping at his feet.
"What is that?"
Jeremy picked up off the muddy floorboard along with a crumpled ribbon. "Someone's present." I cracked the door for more light and asked him to unwrap it, seeing as how I only had one hand. "Whose do you think it is?" Jeremy slipped his camera into his pocket and tore off the rest of the paper. Held up the waterlogged book.
"Yours now."
I stood next to him as he flipped through the pages. "Any idea what it's about?"
"Looks like Viking stuff." He tossed it to me. "Too bad it's ruined."
I set the book on the windowsill so I could read it later. From the other side of the barn, Jeremy said, "Oh shit, check this out." He held up a canvas sack that was soaking wet and had all sorts of stuff sticking to it. "We can patch up these holes and make a badass punching bag."
"For punching?"
"Come on, man, what did I tell you about that?"
I nodded. "Think first."
"For boxing, my old man taught me some things."
"They can't see it."
Jeremy turned and looked at the ladder. "Up there."
"I won't be able to clean it anytime soon."
"I'll do it."
"You serious?"
"Yeah, when your old man ain't around. I'll be careful."
"I sensed a condition."
"I don't know. In exchange for one thing."
"What?"
"You do some interviews."
"No way."
"Just pretend ones so I can practice. I want to get out of this place, and no station's going to hire some hick with no experience."
"Pretend?" Yeah, I won't even really record. This is what your father should have had you doing from the start. Getting comfortable talking in front of one person. Deal with your anxiety. Just put up your arms and say, I'm the Messiah. Bow down and worship me. You'd have a ton of followers in no time. What if I don't want them? Then we can keep it all pretend like I just explained. Come on, man. Want me to put the bag up or not? The loft was bigger than I'd imagined, with plenty of room for the mud-filled sack he had just roped over the rafters. Jeremy had placed two folding chairs, a lantern, and some other junk all along the edge, so it looked like I hadn't gotten started up there yet. The hole in my hand had finally closed up, but I still couldn't make a fist. But we'd just finished up our first lesson, and it'd been invigorating, even with just my left hand. This is pretty cool. Besides being faster and the much better boxer, Jeremy never showed off or tried rubbing it in. Before his dad got put away, he used to do tough man contests and taught Jeremy all kinds of tricks. Jeremy was just happy to pass on the lessons. He brought out his tiny GoPro. Now it's your turn. My mouth went dry, but I couldn't say no. So only pretend, right? Jeremy turned the camera on me, no red light flashing. What's your name? I froze. Come on, man, you got to play along. I wanted to help him. It's hard. Do it for the chicks. Pretend a bunch of beautiful women are going to be watching this. Jeremy grinned like he had a great idea. Do this, and when I'm famous, I'll fly you out to Hollywood and introduce you to all the supermodels. You better learn how to talk in public between now and then. The red light went on. Jeremy twirled his finger. I cleared my throat. Hey, I'm Joshua. Say Josh sounds way cooler. I tried again. Hey, I'm Josh. He twirled his finger. I said that was all I had. Jeremy ignored me. Can you please tell us what happens to those who don't believe in you? I shook my head, didn't care whether the camera was running. You gotta say something, not unless you want to stay a virgin your whole life. I don't know how to answer. Like your dad would. I started to say okay, but Jeremy cut me off. Then do it again, but say what you really think.